Good morning. This is Nikhil Mankeko. I am your host
of Poco and Boco. I'm Tracy Jones.
This is People of Color in Boulder County. Today's guest is Melissa Tafura from Boulder Standing Up for Racial Justice.
And Alika Jones, my daughter.
Great. Well, today we'll be talking about the lack of safety, both psychological safety and physical safety, that's come up for people of color since the election. And these issues may have bubbled up to the surface since the election, but they're nothing new for people of color in Boulder County. Melissa, why don't you talk, give a little introduction to Boulder Surge and what you guys have been doing to address these issues in the community?
Well, Showing Up for Racial Justice Surge, our Boulder chapter, is a group that's focused on moving more white people into action for racial justice. So while our meetings and things are definitely multiracial spaces, our real focus is, you know, how can we bring more white people into this work? A lot of people don't really see their way into racial justice work. And so facilitating both kind of some interpersonal work, some personal work around our own privilege and what we have, what opportunities we have to engage with our community to challenge racism in systems and where it shows up in the places where we engage.
Great. Well, recently we've seen hate incidents, including in Longmont, a hate letter sent to a family. Tracy, why don't you talk about that?
This letter reads, "You and your family should not be in this white neighborhood. You and your brown boys are not welcome. Go back to where you came from. You're in Trump's country now. MAGA," which is the hashtag that stands for Make America Great Again.
Melissa, you've met with this family and have been doing work out in Longmont on this. And talk a little bit about that and how the community is looking to address this issue.
Most of Surge's work so far has been really centered in Boulder, and we're really interested in sort of decentering Boulder and really connecting with people in the Longmont area. And it's certainly important for us to pay attention when more overt signs of racism show up, like this letter. But it's also important not to sort of be distracted from them and not focus on the work that we need to do as people who might identify as very progressive, people with good intentions and things like that. So Surge is really interested in engaging more in the Longmont community and elsewhere in Boulder County around sort of, you know, what biases as a progressive white person, or regardless of my kind of political orientation, what biases might I hold, and how does that show up in various, you know, encounters that I have with people, personal interactions, and again, how can I challenge that in a systemic sort of way? So we're really questioning, you know, as a group, we've been talking lately about, like, what does safety look like, and how can white people play a role in kind of identifying the way that safety might be different for us, and yeah, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So this aspect of emotional safety for people of color, since the election, the things that people say publicly, I think they've not exactly changed, because as we've done in racial justice work, those things have been, they get said all the time. But now you have this almost acceptance of it, this people feeling emboldened that they can say anything that might be threatened, or threaten that emotional safety of people of color. And then even that lays a foundation that can escalate into physical violence. How has the response been to this letter in Longmont so far, the community response? What's your, you know, sense of the pulse of that community at the moment?
Well, there's been a huge outpouring of support for the family. And more than that, I think people are really wanting to say, you know, this does not represent our values as the Longmont community. This is not something that we support, and we're ready to challenge that. And so what Surge is really looking to do is help folks kind of identify, what does action look like? I think a lot of us say, you know, white folks, like, this is not what I want to see in my community, and I want to do something to make a difference, but kind of unsure of where to start. So Surge is really interested in helping folks kind of understand what that process might look like in terms of engaging with city or doing some interpersonal stuff.
So could you give an example of an action that a white person could take when they come upon a situation in which a person of color is not in a safe emotional space, or, you know, like, what are some tactics possibly that could be used?
At Surge, we talk a lot about calling in. So, like, how can we meet somebody where they're at, sort of in the moment, and not alienate them? So it's important to really call out things that are, you know, hateful and exclusionary. And at the same time, we want to create a situation where somebody doesn't shut down, while also not catering to sort of what we've termed, you know, we've heard termed white fragility and things like that. So, you know, I, as a white person, I think it's important for me to really demonstrate, like, I haven't got this all figured out, and I have a lot of work to do on my own. And so while I might be engaged actively in racial justice work, I still have a lot of stuff to unpack about my own biases. And so when I'm engaging in conversation with folks, if I see something that is really harmful, like, how can I talk to them in a way that's like, we're on the same level, we're in this work together, and I'm messing it up all the time, but I'm really dedicated to learning about this. And so really focusing, I think, a lot on impact rather than intention is an important piece, knowing that we can have good intentions and still be doing really great harm in both psychological or physical ways.
Yeah, and since the election, something that's come up is you have this two discussions going on, is what I've seen. You have basically now a majority Caucasian population in the city. Oftentimes the discussion is one of disappointment. The vote didn't go the way I wanted, and you see people talking about, oh, this is awful. And but what I find is the dealing with it in abstraction. So the idea of the outcome of the election and this elevation of hate, this almost attempt to normalize it on a day-to-day basis, the effects of the election and things like that don't get felt by them. It's an abstraction, and the people of color, we have an actual threat to physical safety. You know, this kind of speech, it's hate speech, and why it's so bad is it can cause violence. It lays a foundation where people will escalate and think violence is okay. And so this puts people in a distressed state, the emotional safety you talked about. If you could talk a little bit about what you might be doing. I know you guys have a potential community meeting coming up where you're going to address these issues of some of the more subtle aspects of bias and hate that have been coming up. Talk a little bit about that.
Again, going back to sort of the notion of, like, what does safety look like? I'll use an example. I live in Longmont, and so this isn't particularly important to me that I start engaging people specifically in my community rather just in the city of Boulder. But for instance, we received a letter from the Longmont Police Department a few months ago saying there was increased criminal activity in the park across the street from our house, and they were asking neighbors to report any suspicious people or suspicious activity. And my husband is Black, and when I read that letter, I became really afraid. And I'm sure, you know, him reading the letter is even, you know, that elicits a lot of greater fear than I felt as a white person, of course, worrying about him or worrying about my kids. But, you know, I think as a white person, you know, I grew up, that letter for a long time, probably something like that would have seemed totally fine. Like, yes, let's work together and identify what the problems are so we can keep our community safe. But what I realize now, as I've been more involved in this work and as I see the impact on people like my husband, I realize that, you know, reporting suspicious people quickly turns into my husband in the garage doing some work and somebody calls and says there's somebody doing something, yeah, breaking in, or right. And so we see that, you know, cropping up around the country, similar things like that. And so I guess in terms of action, going back to that piece, you know, what would it look like rather than just me as an individual writing a letter to the Longmont PD and saying, you know, this has a potential to create harm and exclude people and really cause danger, physical danger to somebody. But what would it look like to do work in the community and strengthen people, create communities where we're ready to really work together and engage with the city and say, you know, none of us, a huge number of people say this is not the way we want to keep our community safe. And this doesn't actually keep everyone safe.
Right. And again, what I'm getting from that is it comes back to well-intentioned ideas that people don't think about how they play out differently for people of color. In Boulder now, we have a community that wants to see itself as a liberal and progressive community. And, you know, as we head into the next election season, these are things that get talked about a lot. And you will talk about community issues like homelessness, affordable housing, but are we actually being inclusive in including people of color when we say that? So people will use these kinds of buzzwords, but it doesn't. It's communicating something different to two different communities. And how do we what can we do to elevate voices of people of color around issues of violence, safety, emotional safety, in a way that's effective?
I mean, I think one of the things that comes up a lot is sort of representation, right? And so we look at, like, who's on our city council? Who's on these different committees and things? And so when we have a mostly white group represented, that's not representing the groups that are most impacted by these things. And so Serge is really interested in leveraging sort of our power as white folks to bring more people of color to the table, right? And make sure that we're amplifying those voices, so not speaking over folks of color, but instead, and not speculating or saying, well, I think, but instead saying, you know, this person has raised this issue or speaks to this in this certain way. And so really amplifying that and getting more diverse representation in the places of power, the places that have, in our communities that have power over, you know, different decisions like affordable housing.
Yeah, I think there's no substitute for someone's sense of experience. And you can't, one of the issues we have, you know, it's always been a problem with leadership is co-opting and taking people's experience and saying, well, I can speak this assumption that you could speak to it better than someone who's actually going through it.
Right now, you're listening to Poco and Boco.
People of Color in Boulder County, I am your host, Nikhil Mankekar.
And I'm Tracy Jones. Our guests today are my daughter, Alika Jones.
And Melissa Tafula of Boulder Standing Up for Racial Justice.
So, in regards to the feeling of safety in being a person of color in this environment, I would like to speak to Alika regarding what was it like growing up in Longmont as a little black girl? Experiences you've had.
I've had kids tell me on the playground to go back to Africa, which I was born and raised in Colorado, so I've never been to Africa, and it's just like the ignorance of children. And that's not really the child's fault. It's the parents for not educating their children that people are different and there are people that don't look the same as you, but they're still people and they still have feelings.
Agreed. So what are some of a more extreme example of being a black person?
Well, I was in the grocery store just shopping, and a toddler came up and bit me because he thought I was made out of chocolate because he had never seen a black person before, which is kind of funny to me because, you know, it's not that child's fault that they live in, you know, not a diverse community, but it is, you know, the parents' job to make their children aware that, hey, there are people with darker skin and they're not chocolate, they're just regular people. Like, kids and parents should all take steps to make sure everyone's aware that, you know, you're not the only person that looks like you and there are people that look different from you, and that's okay, and that's just the way the world is, and you shouldn't bite them.
Agreed. That's an extreme example of just an experience of shopping as a person of color,
yeah,
in a grocery store to be bitten. But we are in a liberal, aware society here in Boulder County. This is an example of, I mean, not feeling emotionally safe or physically safe. On another experience, more up to date,
I know in Alika, you had an experience just after the election with...
I was walking to work and a guy rode by on his bike. I was cutting through the park and he pushed me into a lake. And I had only moved there maybe a few months earlier. I didn't really know anyone. I basically just went home and went to work, and it shocked me because I didn't know this person. I didn't have any issues with anyone in Fort Collins that I was aware of. And yet this person felt it was okay to push me, to physically push me into a lake. So
that's it's disgusting. It's disturbing. It is something we most definitely have to address, because as Nikhil stated earlier, it seems as if hate speech and behavior are being allowed to become the norm. In a young lady walking to work in broad daylight should not be concerned for her safety. Another more disturbing example happened to my daughter last week.
Yeah, I was almost kidnapped, I guess. I was, again, walking to work, and a car drove by and honked and waved, and I thought, oh, well, maybe it's someone I know just passing by. And then they turned around, so I went to, you know, go see who this person is that I might know or who thinks knows me. And it was this strange guy, and he was asking me, like, if I wanted to make money and if I needed a ride anywhere, and he kept, like, trying to get me into his car. So, of course, I got out of there, and then maybe two streets down, a woman stopped and asked me if I needed a ride, asked me if I was okay, and then got out of her car and physically tried to put me into her vehicle. And I ran, and the thing about that that's so scary for me is that if, you know, my mom hadn't taught me how to be careful and taught me, you know, common sense and how to protect myself, I probably would have gotten in the car, or someone else might have, and that's not okay.
Yes, it was again a disturbing experience, and I do have to say, in a positive note, the Fort Collins police were extremely aware, emotionally connective. They were not the example of negativity. They were very, very attentive, very respectful. So I have to give a shout out to the Fort Collins police for responding quickly.
One of the things that's coming up in this is I could see people listening thinking, with all of these incidents, well, that's just the exception. And I know, like, for me, based on what I've been doing in the community a long time, just even, you know, when before I was with the city and the Human Relations Commission, people don't want to believe this happens. And when you bring it up, you get two responses. One is this line in the sand denial and white fragility of, this can't be happening. This doesn't fit this image we have of a liberal city. The second one is rationalization and making excuses. And as a person,
gaslighting.
Exactly.
No, maybe you took that the wrong way. I took being kicked into the lake a wrong way.
Mm-hmm. It's like, well, maybe they did it because, and people will say crazy things like that to try to
validate,
justify,
yeah,
or make it seem like this isn't happening. And you got to imagine, for people of color, this is why a lot of this stuff isn't talked about in the community, because you know that you're going to get a hostile response and someone is going to try to invalidate your own experience. It goes back to what we just talked about. You can't, you know, substitute someone's own lived experience for, hey, I know about this. Because you know what? In these kinds of communities, people don't know. These things happen, as we've talked about this and before we came on the show and talked in the hallway, you know, these things happen all the time. These are not the exception to the incidents, which might be shocking to the people listening, is these incidents of violence, a feeling of lack of public safety for people of color is something we live with on a daily basis. Just going shopping, we have to navigate and negotiate, what is the community thinking about me? What will they do? Who didn't teach the kids what? Who's going to come up and bite me because they think you're a piece of chocolate
even
in the grocery store?
In the emotional and physical toll of having to steel yourself emotionally to prepare for any kind of microaggression, for any physical aggression, the energy that it takes to simply exist as a person of color, it's frustrating, especially when a white person per se won't have the same experience as I will. And when I mention my experience, to be invalidated, to be gaslighted, are inappropriate. But as a Black woman, if I snap and get frustrated and say something, then I'm an angry Black woman. So there's this tightrope of navigation of sanity. It's crazy making. I mean, any other person can have a bad day and say, gosh darn it, I can't stand this, blah, blah, blah. But if I say it, I am an angry Black woman. Look out for her. I am all of a sudden every negative stereotype there is about a Black person simply because I'm tired and I've been hit by 1,000 razor cuts and then splashed with alcohol and I react and now I'm an angry Black woman. And therefore they can invalidate anything that I may say. It's insane.
Well, that's the challenge we have of this is why these issues don't get discussed in this community, because one, if you don't have a lot of people of color in a community, then you'll be speaking to a majority population who, again, does not want to believe these things exist, wants to excuse them, and will try to flip it back on you and say that you did something wrong. So oftentimes, you know, for instance, I meet people who have issues with public accommodations in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've gone out and I talk with business owners all the time where they say, hey, I need to speak to the manager. This group of Muslim students from CU is trying to enjoy a coffee shop, and they've been telling me what's happening to them. And, you know, trying to be a voice for them. Also, I have, you know, the city has some authority. We have laws that actually can be enforced if they don't get responsive to this. But typically, just the idea of going in and having a conversation with them, you know, why wouldn't these students go and tell management or tell an employee at a business what's going on? Well, they don't want to get the police called on them. You'll get the police called on you just for making an issue. And when someone doesn't respond to it, obviously people will not be happy with it. They've also been damaged by a racist situation that may have just happened. Mm-hmm. So when talking about it, and you have someone denying it's happening, excusing it, trying to blame you, you could see how someone might be agitated or upset and get emotional in that moment. And then they want to make you into the problem. This is the issue. The issue is someone is deigning to talk about this. So there's a lack of welcomeness in the community to raising these issues in a meaningful way. And when you think how much the odds are stacked against you of anything actually happening, and the odds are actually a lot better, maybe, that you'll get
re-victimized
again,
mm-hmm.
It's a disincentive to talk about them. But I just want to emphasize, these things, this is the lived experience of people of color. This happens all the time. It's not like, you know, if you ask any of us, do you go through a day? Like, have you gone through a day without some incident like this happening? It doesn't happen. It happens.
Agreed. I want to challenge the other people of color in Boulder County. Speak up. We can't be the only voice in a forest. These microaggressions and macroaggressions are happening daily. The only way to change the situation is to become articulate. It's okay to share your story. It's okay to say, you know what, this happened to me and I don't like it. It's not acceptable. You've been listening to Poco and Boco. I'm Tracy Jones.
And I'm Nikhil Mankekar. Today's guests are Melissa Tafura of Boulder Standing Up for Racial Justice.
And Alika Jones, my daughter. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening.